So I'd like to welcome everybody to the Parsha of Tetzaveh with a disclaimer. We were noting that there is a smaller crowd than usual at the Lunch and Learn, and I think that might have to do with something that happened in Mir, Poland, about 80 years ago. But in this Sefer, which follows the Parshios religiously, when it comes to the Parsha of Truma, it writes Truma Tetzaveh. Okay, so the heading for last week's Parsha has both names of this last week and this week. And it's a little shorter than most weeks. And there is really nothing except for really one, two, three short paragraphs on Tetzaveh. The rest of it is Truma. And then the next Parsha that's discussed is Kisisa. So for some reason, either it was in the editing of the Sefer or finding of the manuscripts, or I'm not really sure how the Sefer got published, if it was by Rav Yerucham or his children. I think it's his own writings, but there seems to be a lull for Parshas Tetzaveh. I think that's why the people didn't come.
They were lulled away?
Lull water.
If it wasn't a leap year, would the two be together?
Truma Tetzaveh, no. They never combine. The first, in fact, the first double Parsha is always the last two of Shemos. Before that, there's no doubling. It's interesting. I don't know why. So, what I'm going to do is share with you really some more of the teachings from Truma, and just maybe a short word on Tetzaveh, if we get to. But there's really something quite, I think, fundamental and profound in the in the words that Rav Yerucham addresses, continuing with Parshas Truma. So if you will pardon the slight deviation from the norm, I will begin. I'm going to begin by asking just some disparate questions that don't seem to relate to one another. Some of them are asked by Rav Yerucham, and some of them, one in particular, is a question that has always bothered me. I probably heard somebody else ask it too, but I'll start off with that one. Why do we not have, in our day and age, prophecy or open miracles, or the Beis HaMikdash, for that matter, which is the home of God's presence on earth? If you say to me, well, because we're not on that level, so that doesn't answer the question, that just begs the question. Wouldn't therefore it follow that if we had those things, we'd be on a higher level? I mean, if we had the Nevi'im, if we had the prophets coming and telling us, come on, everybody, this is what you're doing wrong, God is talking to you, or we had the inspiration of the temple, or we all lived in Jerusalem, wouldn't that help us get on a better level? So we're feeding the fire. We're on a lower level, and we're going to continue to be on a lower level if things don't look up.
Because of Lashon Hara.
I'm not looking for a specific answer. I'm looking for a more philosophical answer. Sure, you could say we were punished, but that doesn't really satisfy the philosophical question. Why, in the time when we need it most, is it not there?
Because you have to have the presence, and with the Lashon Hara, you can't have it.
What is that?
Okay. We just can't have it because we've driven it away.
Could it be because when we were on a higher level and it did not help?
Okay.
God took it away.
Okay. We didn't take advantage of it. Okay. I think what you're saying is, both of you are saying, are correct and probably, frankly, the right answer. But let me just leave that question. I won't give an answer for the time being. Another question. It's also a philosophical question. We read in the Parsha of Teruma, and also Tetzaveh for that matter, how everything is defined. Now, yesterday, I was at a bar mitzvah, and last night, there was a bar mitzvah celebration, Rabbi Michael Berger for his son Hillel, and Rabbi Berger gave a very interesting talk about the difference between Teruma and Tetzaveh, that in Teruma, not only are all of the parts of the Mishkan explained, but their measurements are given. And in Tetzaveh, there is still great description, but you don't have the same exactitude of measurements. And he cited, citing Rav Hirsch, said that there may be a difference in that the Mishkan is strictly confined because it is the house of God, whereas in the priestly garments there is somewhat of creativity is left for the artisans. That's a very interesting idea which he developed. But either way, I'm not going to dwell on the difference between the two, but I'm actually going to look at the commonality between the two, which is that the Torah describes it very, 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 very in great detail. So here's the philosophical question. If the Mishkan is a place for the dwelling of the Divine Presence, and the Divine is the antithesis of confinement, it is God is the all being, bigger than the world, bigger than the universe. There is no physical limitations. There is no physicality to God. It is the epitome of infinity and of unending expansiveness. Why would the house of God be something which is so confined, so measured, so calculated? It seems to be the opposite. You would expect that the house of God would be something where you, when you walk in there, you kind of get this illusion that you're in outer space and all around you is this wide expanse. You wouldn't expect to come in, you know, then to go into this room which is just this narrow, and you come to this box, and this box is told that it has to be one amma by two amos. It seems to be the antithesis of what we would expect from the divine. That is the question. And in fact, the Rav Yerucham quotes Midrashim, where people, not sure if it was Moshe, somebody says, "How can you possibly build a house for God? How can you build a place, a space to contain the creator of heaven and earth?" So it really seems to be paradoxical to build a house for the infinite, and much less to make it so strict and measured. That's another question. A third question, actually I'm just going to share with you a statement which is in the Talmud. The statement of the Talmud is that Pischuli, Pischo shel machat, says God to the Jewish people, if you will open for me the hole of a needle, the eye of a needle, that's where you thread the thread, right? The little hole. Mm-hmm. If you will open for me the eye of a needle, v'ani yeftach lachem kepischo shel heichal, I will open for you, I will expand that hole to be like the size of a hall, of a banquet hall. You open it up this much, and I'll open it up more. Mm-hmm. What is the meaning of this statement? What is God saying to the Jewish people? It's really just a sentence for you to ponder.
Would you also blend in with your second question? Are you really building a temple for God, or are you really building it for the Israelite people, for God's not going to dwell in the temple. You can't convey him in the infinite space.
Okay.
But he is dwelling within the people.
Okay. Right, so this statement would certainly fit better with the idea of expansiveness and infinite rather than the confinement of the Mishkan. That's correct. But still, again, what's the thing about the you do the little bit and I do the bigger, you know?
Well, there were all those miracles that were associated with the temple.
Yeah.
That God could cause an unbelievable number of people to... I mean, how do you get 3 million people
into a little courtyard.
A little courtyard.
Right.
And so, you know, there's some miracles involved.
Mm-hmm. I think, actually, Rav Yerucham asks this way. He says, if God is going to take it from the eye of the needle to the big banquet hall, why can't he just start from no hole and bring it to a big banquet hall?
If he wants us to put out effort.
Yeah, because there's nothing on our part. He's not going to...
Okay, good. You're right again. Okay, but let's put that aside for now as well before I say anything about it. Last thing is that there is a verse from Tehillim, from the Psalms, that we say on Shabbos. There's other occasions when we say it, Motzei Shabbos as well. It's Psalm 91, and it says the following: Yoshev b'seser elyon b'tzeil Shaddai yislonan. That's translated, the simple reading of this verse would translate, whoever sits in the refuge of the Most High, Yoshev, he who dwells, a person, who dwells in the refuge, the Sefer, like tucked away under the protection of the Elyon, God, the Most High, Bitzel Shaddai Yislonan, he shall dwell in the shadow of the Almighty. Actually sounds a little bit redundant because it sounds like they're both saying the same thing. Whoever sits in the refuge of the Most High, he shall dwell in the shadow of the Almighty. Whoever sits in the refuge of God will sit in the refuge of God. Sounds redundant. But the Midrash on that verse says, interprets it this way. It's a response to those who ask the second question, which is, how can God fit into a building? To which the answer comes, Yoshev b'seser elyon, he who dwells in secret, or in hiding, referring to God, the dweller. He who dwells, not the person dwelling in the shadow of the Most High, but he who sits in private is Elyon, is the Most High. It means God sits b'seser. He sits in hiding. B'tzeil Shaddai Yislonan. But he dwells in the shadow of Shaddai. What that means is that God does dwell. He's really hiding, but he's dwelling in the shadow of Shaddai. And the Midrash connects this. What is this shadow of Shaddai?
Wait a minute. You're saying God's dwelling in the shadow of Shaddai?
God is dwelling in the shadow of Shaddai, which is a reference to the Mishkan, because Bezalel is a reference to, or a hint to, Bezalel, who was the architect of the Mishkan. And Shaddai, why the word Shaddai? That's various names of God. Shaddai comes from the word die. Die means enough. When you want someone to stop in Hebrew, die. Die. I used to think they were saying, like, why don't you drop dead? They're saying, die, enough. And we say, Dayenu. It would be enough for us. So, First, God sits in hiding, but he dwells in the shadow of Shaddai. And Shaddai means saying enough. And this is a point. There's a midrashic interpretation that Shaddai is the name which denotes God's creation of the world, in which he said to his creation, die. Enough. Enough form. When he was creating the world, it went from nothingness to existence, physical existence, and at some point God said, enough. What does that mean? So all of this, this whole thing is very, obviously very, has very hidden meaning. But what is the idea, this dichotomy, that God sits in hiding, but he dwells in the shadow of the Mishkan, and that's called the shadow of Dai, the shadow of enough. Have I created enough confusion? Okay, good. I'm glad. Now I can start to tell you what Rav Yerucham says about all of this and more. What's being said here is at the very nature and core of the way God relates to his world and to his creatures. God is infinite, all-powerful. And yet he wanted to create human beings, finite, limited, frail, fragile, always torn between good and evil, always torn between being with God or being against God. We're always flip-flopping. And yet somehow we're told by our sages that we are put here in order to connect with God, to attach ourselves to him, to learn from his Torah, to embody him. Last week we spoke about even to the extent of emulating him and trying to have the same qualities that he has. How does this shidduch work? The infinite with the finite. And what's being said over here is this is the way it works. God exposes himself to the world in a very, very measured way. He says, the whole Mishkan is really my place of dwelling, but really, ultimately, it's really that Holy of Holies. And it's really on the top of the Holy of Holies. It's really, in the words of the Midrash, I'm going to take up about an amma by an amma, a cubit, a squared cubit of space. That's all I'm really going to occupy. God is saying to Moshe, yes, I'm going to dwell among you, but I'm going to come and I'm going to expose myself to you in a very, very small way. Why does God reveal himself and expose himself in a very, very small way? Because the way that he relates to his creation and to the creatures is that he exposes himself only according to what is needed, what is prepared for, and according, most importantly, according to the ability of the recipient to receive him, and not an iota more, not a hair's breadth more. God created the world with the notion of dai, with the notion of enough. I'm going to create a world and I'm going to insert my presence into this world of the finite only according to the ability of the recipients to receive me. It is not God's intention, his desire, to overpower anyone. Again and again, Rav Yerucham quotes the phrase, Ein oba b'tirchos im habrios. He does not want to bother anybody. He does not want to inconvenience anyone. He does not want to force himself upon anyone. God exposes himself in the measure that we are ready to receive him. And that is the idea of the Mishkan being finite. he had to be very strict, and he had to say, Moshe, this is how big the Mishkan can be, and no more. If you bring more, if you make it more, then I'm already imposing. Then already, what's going to happen is what really happened at Mount Sinai. Remember, the people started to say, we can't listen to this. They were listening to God's voice. They said, it's too much for us. If you tell us anymore, we're going to die. And they were right. Because God's presence can literally overpower us. Because basically, you know, if God shines His presence, then nothing else has any intrinsic value, really. We're all dependent on Him. It's just that God has hidden Himself so that we could exist. So the whole idea here is that if we are going to have a Mishkan, it's going to have to be very, very limited and no more than that. And that's how it continues in every generation. If you want to know where is God, right? Why isn't He showing Himself? The answer is He shows Himself as much as we want to see Him. And if we find throughout the generations that, you know, first they were on a higher level and they were seeing miracles and they had the temple, right? It's because that's how much the Jewish people were open to receiving His presence. And if that changed, then God helped pull back. And, you know, you read through the prophets, that's what's happening. In the period of Joshua and the Judges, there was no king. They felt that they were being led by God. God was their king. But after a while, they said, you know, we want to have a regular king. And, you know, Shmuel was hurt by this and was disgusted by this. What are they asking for a king for? What's wrong with me? But what he's saying is, what's wrong with the old system? Where I was a prophet and I came and told them what God said and that was enough. And God said, it's not you, Shmuel. There's nothing wrong with you. They're really rejecting me. They don't want me to be so close. And so that's how it will be. Now we go on to the next stage. The next stage is that they will have a king. A righteous king, but a king. And etc. Everything is proportional, is calculated precisely according to how much the people are open to receiving His presence. This is the formula, which continues without fail, without change from the beginning of creation until the present time. Why isn't there Nevuah today? Why isn't there a Beis HaMikdash today? Apparently, we're not ready for it. We don't have what it takes to receive it.
The way I see it today, there's a lot of disunity between the Jewish people. That's the reason.
Whatever the case may be, we're not. It's not a question on God. Where are you? The question is on where are we? You know, I think about this thing that we're always asking. We say we want Mashiach, right? So let's think about what does it mean. What's going to happen when Mashiach comes? I didn't go to the talk last night. Rabbi Nissel spoke about what it's going to be like when Mashiach comes. I wasn't there, and, you know, is anybody here there? Okay. All I know is one thing. It's going to be powerful. So, is the question, when is Mashiach coming? Should that be the correct question? As if we're just sitting around waiting. Or is the question, are we going to be able to handle His coming? Maybe the question should be, what can we do to work ourselves up to being able to receive the revelation of God that will accompany the Mashiach? Because and the reason why Mashiach hasn't come is because God doesn't want to bother us. He doesn't want to overpower us. So the question is not, well, where is He already? This has implications for our personal lives as well, not just the global picture of the Jewish people. Rabbi Yerucham says an amazing thing. He says, we have to teach Torah the way God teaches Torah. God does not impose Himself. God does not seek to overpower anyone, nor to cause anybody anguish or pain. He's very gentle. And therefore, if we are to teach Torah, he says we have to know who our student is. And we can only reveal to the student what the student is capable of accepting and of hearing. And he says if somebody is teaching Torah and is putting forth more than the audience can handle, he says that's not Torah. That's not God's Torah. Because God does not reveal himself in a way that is beyond people's capacity to receive. And the same thing with personal growth. Now, here's an interesting thing. Each person's perception of reality is really in accordance with their ability to receive. I would call it the heart factor, the heart health that we spoke about before. So, you know, so here's a double-edged sword. A person, right, should not feel that he's being pushed in an area that they don't want to go. On the other hand, a person has to realize that whatever their perception is now, that doesn't mean that's all there is. That just means that's as much as he's open. If he opens up himself up a little more, he'll find that there's more. The more he opens himself up, the more he'll see that there is. So it's a double-edged sword. We have to continue to grow. Nobody's going to be pushed because God doesn't believe in pushing. But you have to realize that there's a lot of growth beyond where we see at this present moment. We have to begin to open. Now let's go back to that, the pinhole. That almost seems to defy everything that we said. Because God said, open up the eye of a needle and I'll break it open to be the hole of a hall. Now isn't that contradicting everything we've said? Isn't that saying that if we're to only open up a pinhole, God is going to stuff in there more than we can handle? Isn't that what that sounds like? You just want a little cup, and I'm giving you a pitcher. Doesn't that seem to contradict? No, you don't. Do you have a problem with that? In light of these words?
Well, no, but I think I know what the answer is.
What's the answer?
Well, to me, it is that once you've opened that little eye of the needle, the little bit from God's perspective that he gives you to you is just enormous.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Good. Very good. Very good. Okay. And maybe to say that in a different way, if this is what you mean, a person could want to grow, could want to open himself up to God, but doesn't know how. All they can do is a little bit. But in that little bit, God understands that there's really potential for a lot more, and what you're really doing is you're really asking for more than you even have the capacity. You want more. So God says, well, I can't give you if you have no receptivity. But if you open it up a little bit, if you can find a little bit of receptivity in you, I will fill you up to your capacity. And it is your capacity. God is always seeking our goodness, so he knows really what our capacity is. And even though we can't even find it within ourselves, God knows how to find it within us. So we open up a little bit, and God knows that there's a lot more room inside that individual. But it's very, very, it's measured. Spirituality is something which, in one hand, it has the capacity for infinity, but it is measured out, it is given, it is served in small measures. So let's see if that answers all of our questions. Why don't we have prophecy, the Beis HaMikdash? God only reveals himself on the level. We could say, well, if we had prophecy, we would be that much better. No, it doesn't work that way. If we were ready for prophecy, we'd have prophecy. If you would suddenly force it upon us, we would be overpowered. Why does God choose a finite, measured building to contain the Shekhinah? He's teaching us this is how spirituality comes into the world, in measure, with bounds, and it is, as you should realize, that's what spirituality looks like in this world. It's not this burst which blows people away. I think we addressed them all. The Yoshev B'Seser. Yoshev B'Seser. You know, us also, if we meet somebody, right, we want to teach them. We've got a lot more within ourselves than we're going to tell them. We're not going to tell them everything. Because we also have to be like God. We also have to keep our essence, you know, our inner selves, the seser. We have to contain that within ourselves, keep it private. Just like God keeps his essence private and only reveal, the Tzel Shaddai, only reveal it in the measure at which it is needed for the receiver, and only in that measured amount. The rest of it is the seser, is kept within ourselves. I always knew there was something special about you know, the Atlanta community, in the sense that, you know, the Feldman's rabbis have always talked about people growing at their own pace. This is the source. This is the source. The source is the Mishkan. The source is the way. This is the mechanism for spirituality to come into the world. As far as Parshas Tetzaveh, I guess in an unrelated point, if I could just share one other thing, one other idea. Kind of ties in. Rashi to the Parsha of Tetzaveh and Truma writes great length to describe in greater detail what the Chumash is trying to describe about the Kelim, the vessels and the vestments. And it's kind of interesting that Rashi would write so much and wouldn't leave it to the student to try to figure out on its own. And what he says is that we see from here that teaching has to be very clear, that things have to be explained in great detail. We have to not just say a general thing and let the students figure it out on their own, but that Torah has to be transmitted in clarity and in detail. And this is also part of the way Hashem wants to reveal himself. You know, again, God is infinite, but he's given us a Torah which really speaks to us. It's not generalities. It may start that way, but there's all of the explanation that comes along with it, the oral Torah, the laws and the explanations and the commentary and so forth. And that's really how he wants us to learn the Torah, in a way that we can break it down, the way that we can receive it. It's according to our intellectual capacity, and it's all part of the wonderful mechanism of transmitting such lofty realities to our finite selves. Kind of ties in, I guess, to that idea. And Rav Yerucham said also that the more we understand and connect with what we're learning, the more it gets into our hearts. And that's what ultimately allows us to grow.
Oh, yeah.